This is Little House, Big World by Sylvie McCormack and the Boom Boom from the Vancouver Adaptive Music Society album. Let me pull up the name here. I have to remember it. It was, let me pull it up. The Strong Sessions. Sylvie McCormack has MS and plays with computer music, soundscape, and composition in order to create music right now. She's a very accomplished artist, and her music can be heard internationally, and her compositions have been published in collections such as the Canadian Music Center and the Canadian Electroacoustic Community. So again, this is the song Little House, Big World by Sylvie McCormack. Enjoy.
In una piccola casa, in un grande mondo, con tanto amore per tutti, con tanto amore per tutti, con tanto amore per tutti.
In a little house in a big world with a lot of love for everyone. Pahay kubo, malaki bundo, magandang, oh my God. Sayook, dai saikahe, fayun, holan. Un petit maison dans la grande. To make us strong, maganda kapasa, oh my God. You are more beautiful than the morning. You are more beautiful than the morning. Maganda kapasa, oh my God.
Une petite maison dans le grand monde, avec beaucoup d'amour. qu'on me rend plus simple.
Are you looking for your next step in education or to travel? Learn about undergraduate and postgraduate programs, professional degrees and doctorates, as well as work abroad, language, travel, and internships at the Study and Go Abroad Fair on February 25th at the Vancouver Convention Center. Admission is free, so check out www.studyandgoabroad.com for more information.
Tune in every Tuesday afternoon from 1 to 2 p.m. for the Community Living Show. Join host Michael, Kelly, and friends on CITR 101.9 FM and also online at www.citr.ca for the Community Living Show, right after the morning after show.
Hi everyone, this is DP for All Access Pass. We will now turn to our second interview with, which is pre-recorded that Desi did with Emily Liddell, who is a writer, blogger, and disability rights advocate from Long Island, New York. She has written for the New York Times, the Huffington Post, and Vice. Aside from writing in her own blog, Words I Wheel By, Emily is the editor-in-chief for Rooted in Rights. She is also one of the hosts for a podcast called Accessible Stall. So here's Emily.
So let's start off with just a simple question here. So your blog title is Words I Wheel By. Can you tell us the story behind that?
My mother is actually the one who came up with Words I Wheel By back in 2013 when I was thinking about starting a blog. We were throwing around names and different ideas for what I could call my blog, and we wanted it to be something creative and something that fit my personality. I can't even remember what some of the other ideas were, but because I am a writer, we ended up focusing on words I live by and words to live by, and then it eventually became Words I Wheel By. We thought it would be a fun little play on words, and the name has stuck ever since.
Nice. So what words do you live by then?
I have a bit of a motto, and it's become the catchphrase that I use to define and explain all the work that I do. I always say that if you want the world to be accessible to the disability community, then we have to make the ideas and experiences surrounding disability accessible to the world. So that is to say that it's a two-way street in a lot of ways. I do believe that access and inclusion are things that we should expect. Mm-hmm. And I also think that in order to make that happen, it helps to be open about what it is that we're experiencing to educate non-disabled people and to show them just why access and inclusion is so important. And so that's what informs all of the work that I do.
So what made you want to start writing about disability? When you started to become a writer, was that your initial interest, or?
I have always loved to write, but it didn't occur to me to write about disability until I was a little bit older. The first time I sat down and really wrote something about disability, it was an op-ed for my college newspaper. And I was inspired, if you will, by some frustrations over my campus Disability Awareness Week that was going on. And I felt that a lot of the activities they were doing were pretty surface level and not really diving deep into talking about disability and representing disability in an authentic way. And so that was my first more public foray into writing about disability. And from there, I realized that I wanted activism to be part of my profession. So writing about disability is something I've been doing for quite a while. And I would say it's definitely where I got my start in writing for more than just myself.
Right. Right. So kind of going on that, you're the editor-in-chief of Rooted in Rights. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about what is Rooted in Rights?
Rooted in Rights is a platform that amplifies the authentic stories of the disability community. So the mantra of the disability community is nothing about us without us. And Rooted in Rights really exemplifies that because we put the power in the hands of the disability community to tell their own stories and to represent themselves rather than having non-disabled people represent them. And so as editor-in-chief, I work with people who want to share a personal experience rooted in a disability rights issue and share a message of why that particular issue is important to them and how a particular experience has impacted their life. And so I really love working with Rooted in Rights because we are truly so deeply rooted both in rights and in authentic storytelling and in sharing crucial messages in the disability community right from our own voices.
And can anyone pitch for Rooted in Rights?
The most important thing to note about pitching Rooted in Rights is that we only accept pitches from people who identify as disabled. So I think that that's what sets us apart from a lot of other platforms. We want to ensure authenticity. And doing that means that the story needs to come from the person who's impacted by the story. And so we invite disabled writers and especially multiply marginalized disabled writers to pitch us. And it can be from anywhere in the world.
So with your experience with Rooted in Rights, you've also written for New York Times, Huffington Post, and The Vice to name a few. What are some things you've learned from writing about disability now for quite some time?
That's a great question. I don't want to go to the old standby that so many people say about don't read the comments. I think that in some cases it's true that you do need to take care of yourself and take some of the comments with a grain of salt, because the reality is that discussions of disability rights sometimes don't go over so well right. with certain people. That being said, I try my best to engage in comments whenever possible. I've learned that part of the fight for disability rights sometimes means that we have to engage in an open dialogue and meet people where they're at instead of just ignoring feedback. Of course, if somebody is trolling you and saying really awful, horrible things, you're under no obligation to respond.
Right.
But I think that it is so important to have conversations and to really invite people in and to give them a stronger insight into your perspective and where you're coming from. I think that's how real change is made. So if there's one thing I've learned, it's that it is okay to read the comments and to engage, but know when to take a step back.
Right. That sounds very difficult. So kind of that actually leads into our second question. What kind of responses have you received both from those that are able-bodied and from the disability community?
The responses I get to anything I do publicly are often such a mixed bag. I would say that they are so often positive, and so often people are willing to listen, and I really want to give as many people as possible the benefit of the doubt and recognize that perhaps it just might take a little bit more time for them to have a deeper understanding of where I'm coming from.
Right.
But at the same time, there are certain people who it does feel a little bit like talking to a brick wall, and I recognize that we're just never going to agree on certain things. It can be especially challenging when someone who does not identify as disabled acts as though they know better than someone from the disability community what it's like to experience disability. That being said, I always make sure that people know that when I'm writing, I write about myself,
right,
and I don't speak for the disability community as a whole.
Right.
And so there have definitely been times when even other disabled people have come back to me and said, I really don't agree with your viewpoint. Right. But for me, the most important thing is to try to maintain that openness, even if I do get a negative response.
Right.
Which does happen more than I would like it to, but there are also so many people who come to me and say, you know, your writing or even a blog post that somebody else wrote for Rooted in Rights that I edited, that it motivated them to change their thinking, or they see an issue in a new light, or if they are disabled themselves, then they felt less alone. So that's why I write.
Right.
For them.
That it's worth it in the end, I guess.
Absolutely.
Nice. Yeah, it seems like there's a very I'm just reading this, that there's this very important aspect of positionality, speaking where you're from. And I see that in Rooted in Rights as well, for people to speak where they're coming from, and all rooted in people with disabilities speaking about issues relating to disability instead of able-bodied people, I guess.
Yeah, it's something that I value so much. It seems that mainstream media still has not quite fully opened its doors or warmly embraced disabled writers writing about disability. I think that we're getting there, and it's improving vastly, but there's a lot more work to be done to expand disability representation in mainstream media. And so I think that hopefully there are ways to chip away at this lack of representation, and there are so many talented writers who have disabilities who are out there doing that work right now.
Right. And how is Rooted in Rights different from your own blog, Words I Wheel By?
Words I Wheel By is purely pieces that come from my own perspective on the, unfortunately now, more rare occasions that I am able to write for it. But I would say that the way that I write does inform the way that I look for other people to write, with an openness and an eye towards storytelling, and really drawing the reader in. So obviously, you know, Words I Wheel By and all of the personal writing that I do is separate from Rooted in Rights, and I take great caution never to insert myself into somebody else's writing. It's their voice. It's not my voice. My edits are always you know, pushing people to be themselves and not for my voice to come through. So I would say that's the real difference, is that even though I'm behind the scenes working on pieces, it's not me doing the talking. It's really, truly, it goes back to authenticity, which seems to be my buzzword here, but it's the person who is writing the blog who is really doing the talking.
That's such an important consideration. So now moving to something else, you're actually quite familiar with the spoken word platform, like us. You have a podcast called Accessible Stall. Can you tell us a little bit about it? How did it get started?
My best friend, one of my best friends, Kyle Kachadurian, and I, we loved to talk back and forth about disability issues on a private basis, and we would get into heated discussions, which he would probably call arguments, so much that we finally realized that a podcast would be a great outlet to have these conversations. And perhaps that sounds like we were a bit full of ourselves, like if we're arguing, everybody else needs to hear our arguments. But more to the point is that I think a lot of the most real and vulnerable conversations about disability issues happen behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to take them out of private places and bring them to other people who may have been feeling like nobody else was talking about the issues and getting into the controversies that are going on around disability. So we named it the Accessible Stall because, and this is probably more of a high school cliche stereotype, but when girls would go to the bathroom together and they would just sort of sit there and chat and have all the conversations that you can't have outside the walls of the bathroom, we called it the Accessible Stall because we just kind of want to invite everybody into those conversations that you don't normally hear. And it's been a lot of fun to share our perspectives and to have other people share their perspectives in return.
Oh, nice. Now, can you share any memorable episodes that have stood out to you?
Oh, wow. As of the time that we're doing this, we are so close to 50 episodes.
Oh, my gosh. Congrats.
Yeah, that's a bit of a milestone for us. But in terms of episodes that really stand out to me, we did one where we talked about sexual harassment and abuse and disability. That was quite some time before the Me Too movement began, but mm-hmm. it's unfortunately still all too relevant. Right. And then, you know, we've done some more lighthearted ones. I don't know why this is the one that's coming to mind right now, but back when Pokemon Go was a big thing, we read some critiques about accessibility.
Right, okay.
And so we recorded an episode talking about accessibility and framing it through the lens of the Pokemon Go craze. Oh, and so I think there even those two episodes come to mind, even if they're not necessarily my favorite episodes that we've ever done. It really shows the dichotomy between the serious and the silly.
Mm. Sounds like quite the interesting episode.
Yes.
So for people who may not know, can you explain to listeners what is Larson's disease?
Sure. So it's actually Larson's syndrome. It is a genetic joint and muscle disorder. So I have it, and my mother has it, and her younger brother has it. And it manifests differently in pretty much everybody. It's pretty rare. It's about 1 in 100,000 people who have it. And although I could do a little bit more explaining, I think probably the best place to go is LarsonSyndromeResourceCenter.com, which is actually a website that my mom manages, so perhaps I'm a little biased, but it is a really good resource for information on Larsen's for people who are curious to learn about.
Hello, listeners. So stay tuned as we're coming back after the break.
Are you interested in Vancouver's local music scene? Then join CITR's Music Collective. We handle all things music, from setting, taken down, and just enjoying live performances to archiving. Join the collective to hang out with like-minded, music-obsessed folks. Open to everyone, no experience necessary. For Word on the Street podcasts and more info about the collective, visit CITR.ca and email volunteer@CITR.ca to get involved.
Okay, with that, we're going to play the second half of Emily Ladau's interview. Emily Ladau is from Rooted in Rights and the blog Words I Wheel By. Hope you guys enjoy the rest of this interview.
It is.
The Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, enacted 27 years ago, was subject to a recent change. ADA is a civil rights law in the United States that prohibits discrimination based on disability. And 5 days ago, on February 15, the ADA Education and Reform Act passed in the House of Representatives with a 225-192 vote. This legislation, also known as H.R. 620, requires that individuals with disabilities facing accessibility barrier from a private business would have to provide a written complaint, which would then give the business 60 days to respond, and another 60 days for the business to begin improvements. Those in favor of the bill say that it will curb the so-called cottage industry of costly lawsuits. However, this legislation has received major pushback from disability advocates. I asked Emily what her thoughts were on this matter.
I'm honestly so frustrated by the passage of the ADA Education and Reform Act. I really think that it is a misnomer. I think that in terms of education and reform, all it's really doing is putting a burden on the disability community, who's already been waiting for almost 28 years for businesses to comply with this civil rights legislation. And now it's saying that instead of being able to sue a business for being inaccessible, it's up to the disabled person to provide a business with written notice that the business is breaking the law. Now, I don't know about you, but I think that a business owner should already know if they're breaking a law, especially something as major as the Americans with Disabilities Act, which has been in place since 1990. And so it's been frustrating to see how many people are placing what they believe are the best interests of the business owners over the interests of access for the disability community, especially when it's actually in the best interest of business owners to provide access to the disability community, because that just means more business for them, because we're the world's largest minority. You know, 1 in 5 people in the United States have a disability, and so it just makes good business sense to be accessible, and it's also the law. But now, with this new legislation, representatives are basically saying, well, your accessibility can wait a little bit longer. It doesn't matter that you've already been waiting for 28 years. Right. And so it's been difficult, but I also believe that the fight is not yet over and that there's still action we can take to fight for our protections under the ADA.
So here in Canada, we're currently actually in the process of getting our very first accessibility legislation. We don't have one in place in the moment. In your opinion, why is an act like the Americans with Disabilities Act important, or maybe why is it not important?
I think it's crucial, and that's probably For a couple of reasons. First of all, because I'm an ADA baby. I grew up under the ADA. I have always known a world with the ADA, and so it's not something that I take for granted. It's something that I recognize has given me access to so many opportunities that people before me fought for. So the importance of having an accessibility law cannot be overstated. At the same time, I struggle with the fact that the ADA is already difficult to enforce, and now this new legislation would make it even more difficult to enforce. Mm-hmm. And so the ADA is a bit of a catch-22. It's a great thing, but there are still some difficulties with it, but I'd rather have it than not have it at all.
All right. So kind of going back to you, in your blog, Words I Wheel By, you have this great quote where you say, "All my activism is driven by my firm belief that if we want the world to be accessible to people with all types of disabilities, we must make the disability experience accessible to the world," which you mentioned earlier. So why do you feel that it's so important to bring awareness on disability and accessibility?
I have long believed that awareness is only the first step when it comes to a world that's more accessible and inclusive to the disability community. What we really need to do is move beyond awareness to a deeper level of understanding and acceptance. And the way that we do that is through communicating in whatever means that we can. And if we are communicating, then we're building bridges and we're closing gaps that are so often part of the reason that access and inclusion barriers still exist.
Nice. So what have been some of your greatest accomplishments thus far, you would say?
Oh, goodness. I'm quite proud of many of the things that I've had the opportunity to do. I suppose something in terms of personal writing that I'm especially proud of is having a piece published in the New York Times Disability Op-Ed series on my experiences with online dating as a disabled woman. I'm particularly proud of that piece. And then on a larger scale, I recently was selected for the Paul G. Hearn Leadership Award that's given by the American Association of People with Disabilities. And it is a monetary award that will allow me to start a disabled writers fellowship program through Rooted in Rights. So I'm going to be able to build this program from the ground up that mentors and guides writers with disabilities and gives them the opportunity to really build up a portfolio and to hopefully gain some valuable experience that they can then translate into a writing-related career. So I've not yet built the program, but I feel certainly that it is an accomplishment to have even been selected for the award and given the opportunity to do so.
Those are amazing accomplishments. Now, we're running out of time here, so I just want to end off and ask, is there anything you would like to say to our CATR All Access Pass listeners? The radio world has your attention.
I would love to first encourage people to read some of the great work and watch some of the incredible video content that's being put out through Rooted in Rights. And they can do so just by going to rootedinrights.org or finding us at Rooted in Rights on Facebook. And then I encourage people to pitch us blog posts if that is something that they're interested in doing. Even though we are based in the United States, we absolutely welcome international submissions. And I just want to reiterate that it really all comes down to communication and to taking back our power as disabled people and telling our own stories.
Awesome. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
It was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, with that, guys, I think we're about to head out here.
So if you are interested in joining our team or think there's an issue we should bring up on our show, please send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.